Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a free ebook for you to download today that you won't want to miss. It's called In Conversation with Jordan Peterson, Atheism, Christianity, and the Psychology of Belief. This special ebook was created from an unbelievable podcast with famed Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. And in it, you'll discover how to bring order to a chaotic world using the wisdom of the Bible. So download your free copy of In Conversation with Jordan Peterson by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. This is a limited time offer, so make sure to do it today. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley. You are listening to a special edition of Unbelievable. Just last week, we launched an extra midweek podcast. Every week, as well as the normal episode of Unbelievable, we will be introducing you to a program from the archives. The episode that you're about to hear was first broadcast on Premier Christian Radio on the 8th of November 2008, and it features Christian professor John Lennox and atheist professor Richard Dawkins. Justin Brierley recorded some really interesting interviews with both of them, so do make sure that you listen to the whole show to hear what they had to say.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the programme. I'm Justin Brierley with you through till 4 o'clock this afternoon for Unbelievable. And we're doing things a little bit differently today. Let me tell you what's happening. You're unbelievable. Well, I'm not going to be joined by guests in the studio on this occasion. No, today is a day when I will be bringing you a review of a debate between Christian John Lennox and atheist Richard Dawkins. It happened a couple of weeks ago in Oxford on the 21st of October 2008. And, it was a really interesting discussion. I'm not going to be able to play the audio. You'd have to order the DVD to actually see the debate. But I'll be playing you some interviews I took afterwards, part of the press conference, and other bits and pieces, including some great interviews with Richard Dawkins himself and John Lennox. I'll be giving my sort of commentary, if you like, on those as we go through the programme. Hope you really enjoy it today. They were debating, has science buried God, at Oxford University on October the 21st. It was organised by the Fixed Point Foundation. It was the second debate between John Lennox, who was the Christian protagonist, and Richard Dawkins, who is obviously the atheist protagonist. Their first one was in Alabama. Birmingham, Alabama, in the southern states of the USA. This one, of course, on Richard's home turf, and indeed John Lennox's home turf in Oxford. They're both professors from Oxford, but very different ideas about whether science has in some way disproved God. And John Lennox has written a book called Has Science Buried God? The title of the book is God's Undertaker. The subtitle, Has Science Buried God? And so two very worthy opponents. Well, I can't give you the actual audio of the debate itself. You're going to have to get hold of that yourself by pre-ordering the DVD. If you want to do that, you can go to, and I've got the web address here, fixed-point.org. That's fixed-point.org. But I am going to be presenting a review, my thoughts on the debate, and various interviews I took during the course of the evening following the debate. So let's start off with immediately after the debate had concluded. There was a press conference, and I'm just going to play you some of the questions that were asked at that press conference and the responses from Dawkins and Lennox. So here's the first question. This was a reporter who said that that Richard had said in his book, The Devil's Chaplain, that in the 21st century, we may have to at some point abandon Darwinism and what his response is to that. Here's what Richard said.
I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, when you said that I had said that in the 21st century we may have to abandon Darwinism, did I say that?
Page 94 of The Devil's Chaplain.
Well, if I did say that, I can imagine the context might have been a kind of bending over backwards to say that science doesn't know everything, and if new evidence came up which indeed disproved an existing scientific theory, then of course we would abandon it.
So that was Richard's response to that one. But the reporter came back to say, well, isn't science always having to be open to change? We can never say that we've reached an absolute conclusion.
I think that it is always too early to reach an absolutely certain conclusion. That I would accept beyond question. However, to say that because we cannot deny some particular philosophy, such as theism, today, that should be taken any more seriously in the future than any other. I mean, I would think that if present-day science is in some way disproved, if some major theory like evolution is disproved, what will disprove it will be something altogether grander and more mind-boggling than anything that theologians have ever imagined.
It's interesting, isn't it, that Richard did at least admit that we can't deny theism, in line with similar comments he makes in the debate as well and in my interview later on. He doesn't seem here as certain as he comes across at other points that there is almost certainly no God. He seems to be saying that you can't deny necessarily theism. It's just he doesn't believe it offers the best explanation, but not as strong as sometimes we're led to believe with Richard. A second question came from Jeremy Smith from the Oxford Mail and Times. He said that having read The God Delusion and thoroughly enjoyed it, he put it down on a Saturday evening and thought, I must go to church tomorrow because the universe just seems so bleak and hopeless. And these were his words. He said, Richard, you actually in a bizarre way converted me to Christianity because your arguments just left me with absolutely no sense of the wonder of the universe. Here's Dawkins' response to him.
It's an extraordinary thing to say that you must go to church because otherwise the universe is too bleak.
Yes.
Maybe it is too bleak. I mean, why does it... How could it possibly change things just because it feels good?
Now, the reporter went on to explain that we seem to want to believe that there's more. And has Dawkins ever once just wanted to think it would be great if there was a God?
Maybe I have, but if I have, so what? Doesn't make it true.
No.
I mean, that's what matters, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, isn't that end of argument, end of story?
Well, we'll hear more of those kinds of sentiments when we hear my own interview with Richard Dawkins a little later on in the programme. Do stick around for that. Now Nigel Bovey asks the questions. Nigel is from The War Cry, the Salvation Army newspaper. He asked of John Lennox whether Richard's book could be seen as a good thing for Christians.
Either God exists or he doesn't, and I agree with
Richard.
We agree
about that, yeah.
The great thing about the two of us is that we can at least talk because neither of us is a postmodern relativist.
That's right.
Right.
Say that again.
We do. Well, I'll say it again just so that they see that we agree about something. But it's actually a very important something. What I would say is this. If I think of one of Richard's works, that is the recent one, The God Delusion, I would agree with some of his criticisms of religion. And I think they need to be brought to people's attention. That's the one side. Certainly the book has had the effect of putting the God question on the agenda in a very big way. And I think that's a very good thing. I believe firmly that these things ought to be the subject of public rational discourse in a friendly and respectful manner, and so in that sense, absolutely certainly. I think it's no question. The very fact that we got this place packed tonight and all around the place when one gives lectures on it shows that there's a great interest in it, and I welcome that, and I think you do too. That we do want to investigate, because I'm not the type of closed-minded person, I hope, that's not prepared to consider the evidence. I mean, I find that reading The God Delusion actually considerably strengthens my faith in the Christian faith, because I don't find its arguments, as Richard knows, I'm not telling him something he doesn't know, I don't find them convincing.
Well, John Lennox there replying to Nigel's question. And John Lennox, if you don't already know, is a professor of mathematics at Oxford University, a fellow of Green College, and was a great adversary for Dawkins. As I say, he has written a book coming back at Dawkins and the God Delusion. Now, the debate ranged on many scientific aspects, and John was keen to promote those ones that suggest that there is design to the universe or design to life. The fact that the origin of life, when life came into its existence, regardless of the evolution thereafter, that is a sign that there must be a design, because it's so incredibly complex, it can't just have arisen by chance. And similarly with the universe, the fine tuning of the universe, the way that we see it now and understand it. He had many things to say on these issues. And well, Richard Dawkins' main line of attack was that John believed strange things, essentially, that Jesus turned water into wine and was resurrected and that kind of thing. And basically suggested that scientists simply can't, you know, accept that miracles happen, because that would just, you know, put an end to scientific endeavour, which obviously John came back to in various ways. But he seemed to, at least in some respects, make room for the idea of a deist God, which is just a God who sets the universe in motion, if you like, but doesn't intervene. And that's very interesting, because he came closer than I've ever heard, either in debate or in writing, to say that there could be a good case made for a deist God. That's Richard Dawkins. But he, nonetheless, if you like, added caveats to that, to talk of a God who's interested in sin and what we do with our genitals, and who became human to die on a cross and rise again in some backwater of Palestine. He says all of that stuff is petty, and, you know, why would a God who created want to do all that kind of thing? And obviously that those are serious questions for Richard Dawkins. And John Lennox did engage with him on that, and indeed explained why belief in Jesus's resurrection does make sense of the world as far as he's concerned, and the fact that sceptics like Richard Dawkins do need to give serious heed to the arguments for the resurrection, just as they do to their scientific endeavours. So the debate ranged much further than just, if you like, does science disprove God, just that debate. It was interesting how far they did go into theological aspects. Well, I was also able to pose a question to Richard, and here's what I asked.
Professor Dawkins, some of your critics have not just been Christians, but fellow atheists. For instance, Michael Ruse has suggested that the God delusion, while you were in safe ground on the biological side, that's your strength, that you shouldn't have started to dabble in theology and philosophy and social science, and that really hasn't been done at all justice in the God delusion. I've heard people say that if it was handed into them as an essay, as a philosophy essay, it would come back with red scribbles all over it to say, please see me. I mean, have you possibly been a bit too perfunctory and a bit too polemical, really, in the God delusion when it comes to these arguments of philosophy in the existence of God, which have been raging for literally millennia, and you dispense with in a paragraph or two in the book?
Chapter 3, the whole of Chapter 3 is based upon those arguments. I would like to hear what's wrong with the arguments that I put forward in them. It's one thing to say, a philosophy tutor would draw a red pencil through it, but nobody has actually said what's wrong with it. As for theology, I don't admit that theology is a subject at all. It seems to me that, I mean, obviously, there are professors of theology who do fascinating things, like biblical history, biblical literary criticism, and so on, but theology as a subject that studies things like the Trinity or the transubstantiation or the mystery of the incarnation is a complete non-subject, unless you accept the premise, which is God and all that goes with it. So I should no more be learned in theology than you should be learned in fairyology or unicornology before you say I don't believe in fairies or unicorns.
Well, I suppose my response would be to that lots of people do believe in God, and that's why theology is a subject worthy of study. Just because Richard Dawkins doesn't believe it doesn't mean it's not worthy of attention. Nobody's asking him to engage with it at that level, but there are various theological and philosophical questions that do arise from Richard's own atheist beliefs, and you have to engage with those. You can't just toss them to one side. And I did put some questions to him a little later on, and as I say, later in the programme we'll hear that interview in full that I had with Richard Dawkins a little later. So you're listening to an edition of Unbelievable, where we're reviewing a debate that took place between John Lennox, the Christian in this case, and Richard Dawkins, the atheist. And the responses that I took after that debate with various people who had watched it, we'll hear some responses from atheists and Christians and from the two gentlemen themselves a little later on in the programme. Do visit premier.org.uk/unbelievable, where this will be going on as a podcast very shortly. Do send it on to friends. Let people know about what's happening on the Unbelievable webpage. There are loads and loads of past programmes of discussions between Christians and non-Christians that you can get hold of, you can get as a podcast, and you can get that interview with Richard Dawkins by itself there as well. That's Unbelievable. The webpage, premier.org.uk/unbelievable, to access that. Okay, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes' time.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
And listening to a special edition of the programme. I'm not joined in the studio by a Christian and a non-Christian this week, but I was at a debate, a very important debate, very special debate between a Christian and a non-Christian. John Lennox, the Oxford professor, and speaking in favour of a God who is perfectly compatible with science, indeed supported by science. This was at Oxford, the Oxford Museum of Natural History, on the 21st of October 2008. And his opponent, very well known, of course, Richard Dawkins, who has said in various ways, in various books, but perhaps most famously recently, The God Delusion, that science has annulled any point, any reason for believing in the existence of God. Well, that was the subject of their talk, Has Science Buried God? And the discussion is available from the Fixed Point Foundation. If you want to pre-order that DVD, go to www.fixed-point.org. Well, I'm giving a review of the discussion and my thoughts on it, and if you like, playing out some of the interviews that took place and that I took during the course of the evening. Lots of people turned out for this. The place was absolutely packed, a wonderful venue for it, with all these wonderful fossils of T-Rexes and things all over the place. Many people also went to the book signing afterwards, and I grabbed some of them on the way out, having had their copy of The God Delusion or God's Undertaker signed by either Richard or John Lennox. Alex was one of the people I accosted, and he's doing a postdoctorate at King's College on the evolution of antibodies. So he represents some of the bright brains who were present at the event, and I began with a question that I'd ask of all my interviewees.
So, have you come here with a particular faith perspective?
I'd say a non-faith perspective. Yes, I'm sort of a Dawkinsite, if you like. Yeah.
And what did you think of the debate tonight?
Oh, it was wonderful. Yes, very nice. Both sides, very eloquent, very lively. Yeah.
Was there a clear winner in your eyes?
Well, of course, for me, yes, for me, I'm most satisfied by Dawkins' explanations, although some interesting points were raised by Professor Lennox as well.
Did you feel, what, if you like, of Lennox's objections for you were the most forceful?
Well, I've heard the argument that morality is based in the Christian faith or flows from God and so forth. And he obviously tried to push that forward. Personally, I think there is an evolutionary basis for morality as well, although Dawkins didn't get a chance to kind of point that out.
What about Lennox's contention that science has actually, in some areas, widened the gaps rather than shrunk the gaps as far as our understanding, because it's shown the complexity of the universe and the facts that needed to be in place for the Big Bang for us to be here, etc. It seems to suggest more and more, in fact, that there had to be a rational explanation for our very existence than we ever realised before. Does that hold any water for you?
Well, I think you can start by looking at a bigger picture and then start to take your microscope to that picture and discover that there's more to it than you thought. But it doesn't stop looking at the big picture and still seeing it as you first did from being true. From being justified. I mean, just because you go in there and you learn that there's brushstrokes doesn't take anything away from your initial view of the picture. So likewise, I think that although, for example, there's many questions to be found in the quantum field, it doesn't mean that what we know from Newtonian physics, for example, doesn't still hold true. Snooker balls will continue to behave in a predictable way that we knew in the 19th century likely till the end of time. Just because we discover Higgs bosons and other fundamental particles doesn't mean that everything from an atom to a galaxy behaves in a nice way. I mean, I think science advances, but just because we discover more complexity doesn't mean it goes backwards at any point.
Well, thank you very much. And was it Alex?
Alex, yes. Yeah.
Well, I guess Alex took my question there as meaning we see the universe and it's very complex, but that doesn't mean God has to be behind it. But that wasn't quite what I meant. What I meant was, what impresses me is that the complexity is so fine-tuned that for it to exist by chance seems completely unbelievable. And when we see something incredibly fine-tuned in that way, we would normally look for a designer. None of the atheists I spoke to wanted to admit that there could be any kind of supernatural explanation, that would somehow be anti-scientific. And, my question, I suppose, on that is, well, if science isn't open to every possible explanation, doesn't that mean that eventually scientists are coming at it with a bias, an anti-God bias anyway? Eduardo is another biology graduate who I grabbed on the way out. He was studying cell biology in Brussels, and I asked him why he was here and who he was supporting.
I read about Dawkins' book already, The God Illusion. So I came already inclined to his thoughts. Okay. But I thought it was a good discussion because, I'm atheist. But it's always nice to have another discussion, a rich discussion with religion and people, because I think it would bring a good counterattack, because these subjects, they always are brought up with religious people, and it's always nice to have good arguments against them.
And did you feel that the Christian speaker had any particularly relevant points, any points that perhaps you hadn't considered before or were, you know, forceful points in your opinion?
No, because in my opinion, not Christian specifically, but all religious arguments are a circle for me. They always end on the God that you cannot explain the existence of it. And so in the end, you always have this vicious circle of no explanation in the end. That's what's the beauty of science, that you don't have all of the explanations yet, but you're always searching for it. And the religious people just accept some kind of divine thing that you'll never have an explanation, so it's always not a true answer.
I mean, on that subject, one of the things Lennox was keen to press Dawkins on was, how do you explain the universe? Does Dawkins simply believe in the universe as a brute fact? Isn't, as a scientist, he's supposed to look for an explanation? And isn't, for a finely tuned universe in the way that we see it, isn't God a satisfactory explanation for that?
No, because as he pointed out, you have to prove God existence, you have to prove how he was created. How can you believe, what's the point of Dawkins believing that the universe it is as it is, because you can see that it is this way, and how can the religious people just accept the existence of God?
Isn't just believing that the universe exists as much of an assumption as believing that God created the universe which exists?
No, because you don't need God to explain the universe as he exists now. We have a lot of explanations for how is it now. We cannot explain how it culminated to exist, but we can explain a lot of it.
But why can God not be an explanation for you of the beginning of its existence? Why must there be another explanation, and presumably an explanation for that, and an endless regress, essentially?
Yeah, to give an explanation to that, we can regress to, for example, as you said, to some centuries ago, a lot of things were explained by God. But now we know that we don't need God to explain very easy things as evolution itself. We don't need God anymore to explain evolution of man, evolution of anything.
Do you believe, like Dawkins, that there will be a Darwinian or a Darwin for physics at some point who will somehow give a completely scientific, naturalistic explanation for the Big Bang and for the existence of the universe?
Yes, I believe that. Because if you asked somebody else 200 years ago the same question about the evolution of life, the person wouldn't know. You'll say, I believe, but you ask me now and I know about the life. So why not saying that maybe in 200 years the same will happen with the universe?
Thank you very much.
Well, what my chat with Eduardo confirmed is that the God delusion has obviously cemented the beliefs of many people who were leaning away from belief in God to the first place. And Eduardo also had that same confidence as Richard Dawkins that there will ultimately be a natural explanation for everything. Again, God, something supernatural as an explanation, is always excluded. And, you know, deposit God doesn't actually explain anything. It becomes the God of the gaps. But again, I couldn't help but feel that this misses the force of the argument that our understanding of science, as it has increased, has actually increased the need for an explanation that involves intelligence. Because to say that intelligence needs explaining is to say that God is the same kind of explanation as a natural one. But I'm not saying that God therefore needs to be explained himself, because surely God by definition is an uncaused being. It doesn't need the same kind of explanation that any explanation that Richard Dawkins could give to the beginning of the universe would need. We get an infinite regress, don't we? I did speak to a Christian after the debate, Nigel Bovey. Editor of the Salvation Army's War Cry, is also the author of a recent book where he interviews a number of Christian scientists on why they believe their faith in God is perfectly compatible with their science. And it's called God, the Big Bang and Bunsen Burning Issues. So I asked him for his reaction to the discussion.
I thought it was very enlightening. I thought it was very well balanced. It was carried out in a very good spirit. Richard Dawkins certainly isn't as aggressive as some people make him out. He seemed a very reasoned and a very reasonable character. I thought the debate was very informative. It was... and also, strangely, it still also enhanced my faith. I mean, yes, there are challenges, there are questions that science cannot answer, just as there are questions that faith cannot answer. You know, and that's really why, I suppose, as Christians, we do have to take a lot of things on trust, that our faith is not a formula, it's not a set of knockdown arguments. It's a relationship that's built on trust. And for the things that we cannot know, as well as the things we do, then we keep believing in a creator God who not only created the universe in all its magnificence and in all its splendour, but also, of course, who also, he also, as the psalmist says, knitted us together while we were yet in our mother's womb.
Do you feel Lennox is a worthy adversary of Dawkins, who obviously is very much in the public eye these days?
Yes, Richard Dawkins is, of course, something of a celebrity. You know, the UK celebrity atheist, maybe. Professor John Lennox, I think, was an equal in terms of being able to express himself and his complex ideas with clarity, with simplicity, and yet without being simplistic. And in many respects, in terms of, if we were to put them in the role of opponents, then I think that John Lennox was a very worthy opponent of Richard Dawkins tonight.
One thing that I was struck by was that John Lennox was not just keen to put forward the scientific aspect of the rational, you know, reasons why science is helpful in believing in God, but also the Christian story. He seems very keen to see to help people understand that the Christian God and the Christian story make sense of the world around us. It's not just a kind of academic exercise in whether we can believe in God through science.
Sure. I mean, John Lennox, as a mathematician, he's very keen that science should have its own rigours, and that Dawkins's suggestions of magic should not pop in from time to time and disrupt scientific method. John Lennox also is very keen to stress that you can be a Christian and be a scientist. And in fact, in his view, as in fact in, you know, the Christian viewpoint is that it is a belief in the Logos, in the Creator, in the Triune God, that actually makes sense, ultimate sense of the universe, the ultimate sense of life and the ultimate sense of death. And so, yes, John was very, very strong advocate of the role of faith and also of the need for personal relationship with Jesus to make ultimate sense of and meaning of life.
Nigel Bovey there of the War Cry with his response to the discussion. And if you want to see some photos that Nigel was taking on the night, do go to the Unbelievable group on the Premier community. If you go to my webpage, premier.org.uk/unbelievable, and click on the icon that takes you to the Premier community, you can go to the Unbelievable group, do sign up, become a member. We'd love to have you involved in the conversations going there. But I've just this week posted some pictures of Richard Dawkins and John Lennox in debate at the Natural History Museum. And thanks to Nigel for those photos from that night. OK, well, Nigel and myself both moved on to the reception together that was taking place down the road. And as it happened, Richard Dawkins walked out of the Natural History Museum at the same time as we were heading off. And so I had the unusual opportunity to just have a chat as we were walking. I didn't record this part, but I did have a chat with Richard as we were walking down to the reception area and explained I was from Premier Christian Radio and I'd love to have him on the programme, etc. I hope one day we will have you, Richard, if you're listening. But it was interesting, you know, we established that we had both gone to the same college at Oxford and that kind of thing as undergraduates. Interestingly, he expressed concern when I talked about the fact that Premier is partially funded by donations. We're a charitable organisation. He was rather concerned that the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science had trouble getting charitable status initially. And he sees it obviously very unfair that many religious organisations seem to be able to get charitable status in that way. We got to the reception. There was quite a hubbub, so you'll hear some of that in these interviews that now follow. A number of people milling around. Dawkins very open to chatting to whoever wanted to come up to him. Obviously, he was very much in demand, of course. So I spoke to John Lennox and I asked him how he thought the debate had gone. Here's what he said.
It's very difficult to say because the adrenaline is just unbelievable. And you look back over it, you think there's so many things I could have said better, but I felt I at least did get saying something that perhaps would provide a credible alternative to Dawkins' atheism.
It was a packed house, obviously a lot of interest in this. Do you feel that there is any real response going on generally to Dawkins and the new atheists?
Well, one chap came over to me and he said, "I came in tonight an atheist and a follower of Dawkins, and you have given me an enormous a lot that I now have to think about, because I don't think it's as easy as I thought it was before." So I feel it's generating enormous possibilities for discussion.
One thing about your approach is that you are keen not just to engage on the scientific level on proofs of God, but also very much bringing the person of Jesus Christ and the Christian story. Why, in contrast perhaps to other people who debate Dawkins, do you feel it's important to do that?
Well, I feel it's important to do that, but the interesting thing was it was Dawkins that mentioned it first, and in fact took me completely by surprise at the beginning, that he seemed to feel this was some very odd thing that I would confess to historic Christian faith. But I do feel that's right, because it's not just an abstract debate about is there a God out there and so on and so what. It's about me as a person and how can I be related to the God who is there. So inevitably, as a Christian, I'm going to bring in the centre of my faith, Jesus Christ.
One thing that you sort of went over a number of times for me was the fact that you believe there's a rationality and intelligibility to the universe, and you ascribe that to God. Dawkins says that's just not scientific. We have to wait for science to reveal.
To my mind, that's nonsense, because it's the presupposition of all science. You can't do science without believing in that intelligibility. Science presupposes it. It doesn't explain it. What I would claim is that there's evidence within science that points towards God as the source of that rationality. Rationality is a better source of rationality than irrationality. And I think Dawkins' atheism is a sort of atheism of the gaps. He has no explanation for the rationality behind the universe.
And another interesting aspect of that is that you said that science, in fact, has widened some gaps.
I think so. Origin of life being one. The main one, I would imagine. That's what I would expect.
But Dawkins says it's simply that science hasn't, you know, in 100 years, maybe we will have a scientific naturalistic explanation for that.
Yes, that's what he says. That's his faith, actually. That's an interesting, it's a very touching faith. But the point is that the pointers within life point, to my mind, towards language, DNA,
and language points to a language speaker or an origin of language. And I think the mathematics is stacked against him. I didn't have any opportunity to go into that tonight. That would have been suitable for that kind of an audience. But it
was a fascinating debate anyway. Thank you for being willing to put yourself, as it were, in the jaws of this kind of debate. As you say, you must feel a weight of responsibility when you're in that kind of public setting with the primary atheist.
An enormous weight of responsibility, because you want to make a credible defence of historic Christianity. That's what we're asked to do.
Well, thank you very much for doing that for us, John.
Well, obviously, whoever you speak to, you'll get a different answer about who won the debate. And there's no easy way, of course, of measuring such a thing. In many ways, the conversation ranged in all kinds of directions. It wasn't a formal debate anyway. It was a discussion. And so it went off in different tangents, not dissimilar to the way things sometimes work here in the studio on Unbelievable. But one person has commented to me since that they thought that when it came to the discussion, John Lennox won the battle of the ideas and Richard Dawkins won the battle of the rhetoric, which I think is quite an interesting way of putting it. And to give Richard Dawkins credit, and no matter how, you know, untenable Christians may feel his arguments against God are, he's an excellent speaker and he has inspired a devoted following. Now, if you want to get hold of John Lennox's book, you go to the Premier Shop. His book is God's Undertaker, Has Science Buried God? Do go to the Premier Shop, www.premier.org.uk/shop, to order the book there. Now, as I said, Richard Dawkins has inspired this devoted following. One of them is Nicholas Newman. He's the editor of Oxford Prospect magazine and a self-confessed Dawkinite.
Very much so. I like his rational arguments, bringing rationality into a world of confusion and irresponsibility.
Okay. So you felt he was the clear winner in tonight's debate?
Oh, most definitely. The other one just bumbled about with magic, hysteria and confusion. And no real arguments at all, not really structured in any way. It was a jumble. As one of my fellow colleagues said, if this had been written as an essay, there would be red marks all the way through.
Right. Some have said that about the God delusion. I've actually read those very words from people like Michael Roos, the atheist philosopher, you know, the head of philosophy at the University of California, etc. I mean, has Dawkins, do you think, maybe overstepped his area of expertise? He's a great biologist, not sure he's such a great philosopher. He seems to have branched out somewhat.
He's not stepped out. He is a rationalist. And as a rationalist and a scientist, using scientific argument and the scientific method, he is applying it to new subjects.
Do you honestly believe Darwinian evolution can explain things like consciousness, like morality?
At the moment, it is the best argument going, and until something else comes along.
I mean, the fact is that there are whole fields of area, you know, social sciences, etc., which for which it's hard to fit often a Darwinian explanation for these things.
Darwin's was just part of the revolution in thought. It was not the whole answer. And it's up to scientists and society to discover the new answers and solutions to things. It is not like the Bible or the Quran, which claims to be the answer to everything. It is to get people to think and to challenge, to be sceptical. As another friend of mine, Bjorn Lomborg, says, you've got to be sceptical.
Absolutely. You don't just take whatever anyone says. But, what's the point of life?
Well, as Richard says, to procreate, or to enjoy life, or to earn a living, or a sense of achievement.
When we all finally evaporate in the heat death of the universe, will there be anything beyond that, or is that
God
is that
only
it?
Knows. Bye-bye.
Well, that was Nicholas Newman, and I would raise similar questions that are raised with Nicholas about our purpose and life and consciousness, all those kinds of things, with Dawkins. And you can hear that in the next section of the programme, my one-to-one interview with Dawkins coming up very shortly. And yes, Nicholas says to procreate, make a living, etc. That's what we're here for. And that's all that evolution ultimately does leave us with as far as the things we are programmed to do, I suppose. But I think that most humans believe they're meant for more than that, more than just reproducing and getting by, earning the money to, you know, pay for the food, to eat, to go to work. You know how the things work. I don't think I'm alone in thinking that most humans, if you like, in their soul, yearn for more, for purpose, for significance, and for some kind of ultimate reason. And atheists may say, well, there simply isn't one. Life is what you make it, you know, for yourself. But I just think that actually leaves most people feeling quite cold, quite empty. And like it or not, that will always be a problem for atheists. People don't want that to be the ultimate conclusion. Maybe not. It's not an argument for the existence of God, but I can't help feeling that Pascal was right when he said that we are all born with that God-shaped hole within us and we feel incomplete until it's filled. Well, I'm giving a commentary on some of the interviews I took in the aftermath of the debate between Richard Dawkins and John Lennox at Oxford University on October the 21st. So do join me again in a moment as we continue to look at that and we'll hear what Richard Dawkins had to say to some of these questions.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello and welcome back to the programme. Well, a bit different this week. I'm not joined by guests in the studio here on Unbelievable, but I will be next week. So let me tell you, before we go back to this review of the Dawkins and Lennox debate on whether science has buried God, let me tell you that next week, back to normal format, I'll be joined by Christian James White. Now, he's an apologist for a US ministry called Alpha and Omega, and he is pretty well known, actually, out there for debating with all kinds of people, atheists, Muslims, and people right across the spectrum. He's going to be engaging in the UK next week in a number of debates with Muslims, and he's going to be coming into the studio to do a debate on the Trinity with Abdullah Al-Yusufi. And we're going to be asking the question, does belief in the Trinity lead to polytheism? That's what most Muslims would say, that the Trinity is effectively a polytheistic belief. Well, he's going to be arguing against that. So that's James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries in the US with me on the programme next week, along with Muslim Abdullah Al-Yusufi.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So back to the programme in hand, yes, and I'm reviewing the debate that took place at the Natural History Museum in Oxford between Christian John Lennox and atheist Richard Dawkins. As I say, if you want to get hold of the debate, it's going to be coming out on DVD soon. You can pre-order it at www.fixed-point.org. And it was the Fixed Point Foundation who organised the debate. You'll hear me speaking to Larry Taunton, their director, in a moment here on this programme. But let's go back to that, if you like, reception that was going on after the debate. So you'll hear a bit of the hubbub in the background. Hope you can cope with that. But I did get the chance to interview Richard Dawkins, and he really needs no introduction. So here's our conversation.
Thank you for the debate tonight. It was fascinating. Ultimately, one of the questions in the press conference intrigued me. The chap who said, I read The God Delusion, loved every page of it, but I felt rather depressed at the end and that I should go to church. I mean, atheism, you know, at its absolute level of the universe is all there is just molecules, chemistry, no purpose, no guidance, is terribly desolate in some sense. And is it any surprise that people maybe feel that it just is an awful kind of way of looking at the universe, and they don't want to believe it?
First, I don't accept that it's bleak and desolate. But even if it were, so what? Why shouldn't the universe be bleak and desolate? The universe doesn't owe us comfort, it doesn't owe us consolation, it doesn't owe us happiness. If something is true, then it's true. And no amount of prattling about it being bleak and uncomfortable will make it any different from that. If you've got cancer of the liver, then you've got cancer of the liver, and you can't make it not true by just saying, oh, that's a bleak and uncomfortable view.
What about the idea that you presumably you love your wife? Now, you could reduce that to a Darwinian explanation of love and the, you know, all the benefits that having that feeling gives us. But it's not very romantic if that's what you tell your wife when you go to bed.
I wouldn't use the word reduce, because by using the word reduce, you've automatically made it unromantic. Romantic is what you make it. I'm a human being, and so is she. I live in a human society. And so most of my life is lived in that human context. And I'm as romantic as anybody else.
I'm sure you are. In a sense, what I'm getting at is that there is no thing out there that you would call love. There's no value that exists independently of us that is love. It's just something that has sprung up in the course of the purposeless course of evolution.
Exactly.
And
what?
Well, it doesn't sound like love when you put it like that, because that's not what people think of when they say love.
Once again, the universe doesn't owe you something that you think would be nice. If love exists, love has sprung out of brains which have evolved, and that's the way it is. And I think it's very nice, thank you. I mean, I'm capable of loving, I'm capable of romance, I enjoy music, poetry, everything else. It doesn't add anything to bring in something supernatural. It's just a total sloppy thinking to say that you can't understand romance, you can't understand poetry, unless you drag the supernatural in.
What about ultimate, if you like, morality? Because I know that there wasn't as much time as I imagined there was going to be in the debate for that aspect. And many who are Christians and apologists, etc., would say, ultimately, if there is no morality, as it were, given by God, then there is no compulsion on anyone to stop them going around doing whatever they like, because there's no ultimate moral.
Do you realise what abject contempt you're holding your fellow humans in when you say that? You're actually implying that the only reason we don't go around raping and pillaging and stealing is that we're frightened of God. I mean, what kind of a contemptible reason for being good is that?
That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that whether you believe in God or don't believe in God, everyone feels that there is some kind of objective moral facts around that raping and killing and stealing is wrong. Now, that is true regardless of whether evolution has given us those, if you like, criteria to live by. It's true regardless of whether we have evolved in the way we evolved. It's as true as 1 + 1 = 2.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not as true as 1 + 1 = 2. What we're saying, and I think we're probably agreeing, is that there are certain universal moral principles which everybody has, regardless of their religion and whether they have a religion at all. Things like, actually, there's even been research on this, giving people rather standard moral questions, moral dilemmas, hypothetical ones, and asking which they think is the more moral course. And there's a wide measure of agreement among all humans and different tribes and everything. I see no problem with deriving that from our evolutionary origins. We all have noses, we all have eyes, we all have knees, and these have all evolved. We all have sexual desires because they've evolved. Why shouldn't we have this sense of what's moral? Things like the golden rule, things like do as you would be done by.
But if we had evolved into a society where rape was considered fine, would that mean that rape is fine?
I don't want to answer that question. It's enough for me to say that we live in a society where it's not considered fine. We live in a society where selfishness, where failure to pay your debts, failure to reciprocate favours is regarded askance. That is the society in which we live. I'm very glad. That's a value judgment. I'm very glad that I live in such a society.
But when you make a value judgment, don't you immediately step yourself outside of this evolutionary process and say, there is the reason this is good is because it's good, and you don't have any way to stand on that statement.
But my value judgment itself could come from my evolutionary past, and I suppose...
So therefore, it's just as random, in a sense, as any product of evolution.
Well, you could say that. But it doesn't in any case, nothing about it makes it more probable that there is anything supernatural.
Okay, but ultimately your belief that rape is wrong is as arbitrary as the fact that we've evolved 5 fingers rather than 6. I mean,
you could say that, yeah.
Yeah.
Just one more question on a more scientific aspect of this. You went over to a large degree the complexity of the universe, the fine-tuning at the point of the Big Bang and that sort of thing. And Lennox was keen to stress that God is the only viable explanation for that. You were keen to stress that, well, physics could have its own Darwinian revolution at some point down the line. God is not a satisfactory explanation because then you have to explain God. I mean, wouldn't a definition of God as being an uncaused cause do the job? Because otherwise, don't we have a constant regress as a scientist? Whatever explanation you posit for beginning of the universe, there has to be an explanation for that, and an explanation for that.
Well, that's fine, but then it's sheer hypocrisy to then say, oh, well, once you've accepted that, you might as well go the whole hog and have the virgin birth and the crucifixion. I mean, that really gets my goat.
Okay, but I understand that, but in a sense, John might say, well, let's establish the God thing first, and then questions about how God reveals God's self. But I mean, going back to the original question...
If you want to define God as the singularity in physics that gave rise to the first fundamental particle or something like that, then that's playing with words, and I don't mind playing with words. I mean, you can define God, but I mean, that is quite clearly not the God that anybody actually believes in when they believe in forgiveness of sins and answering prayers.
No, obviously that's... it's only one aspect of that God, as in it's the creator part
But we've smuggled in the illegitimate God by... I mean, the God who is the singularity that creates the first particle is... something that physicists may one day understand, or maybe they won't. But it is clearly a dishonest playing with words to say that has anything remotely to do with the God who forgives sins, listens to prayers, gets born of a virgin, etc.
Okay, I mean, obviously, I understand what you're saying, that there's a lot more information there about this God, and you have great trouble understanding that. That's an understatement. But I mean, ultimately... the fact is that I feel that if the universe exists, logically, it has to have a cause, okay? And so, from that point of view, why is God not a satisfactory cause?
You can define the cause as God, if you wish, but it's a sheer verbal trick. By using the word God, as opposed to using the word thunk or something, you've made it look like the God that is a person, is an intelligence... let alone a sin forgiver.
I mean, in a sense, that's what John Lennox was very arguing, was an intelligence because of the fine-tuning of the universe. That you used the anthropic principle to say, well, if we didn't exist in a universe of fine-tuning, we wouldn't even be able to perceive it and think about it and talk about it in this way. But ultimately, what that boils down to is some kind of belief in a multiverse theory, etc. I mean, isn't that, which there is absolutely no scientific evidence for, just as much a supposition as the supposition that God created the universe we live in? Isn't the multiverse theory
just... when God is three in one, when he was crucified on a cross, rose again on the third day. I mean, what gets me about you guys is you're so bloody confident about things you know. I'm saying we don't know.
No,
that's
absolutely
the humble position.
I'm not trying to argue in this context for the Trinity, the Virgin Birth, and that kind of thing. I'm just trying to argue for the simpler idea of a creator God, a supernatural, something outside the material world. Because that's what my mind leads me to.
There's something we don't understand at the root of the universe. When you don't understand something, it's perfectly legitimate to give it a name. Give it any name you like, but if you give it a name that already means something else, and if that leads you to draw conclusions, or leads other people to draw conclusions, then that is a dishonest use of words.
It's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So that was our conversation as it stood with between myself and Richard Dawkins. You can listen to that by itself, if you like, on the Premier website. You can come to my Unbelievable page to do that. That's premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Lots of people have been going there to listen to it lately, and feel free to forward it on to people who may be interested. It's also been up on Richard Dawkins' own website, richarddawkins.net, and has generated a lot of response there. It's interesting to see what the atheists are making of that particular conversation I had. Now, there's two things that, if you like, really struck me about that conversation. I mean, there were lots of things to pick up on, but two things, if you like, that I would pinpoint. two admissions, basically. The first one being the admission he made about his belief about rape. Now, I only used rape as I could have used any example of something that we believe is immoral. Okay, obviously rape is quite a sensitive one, but it's as good as anything, you know, child abuse, racism, whatever, okay? These things we believe are immoral. And it's interesting that he admitted, although if you listen back, it was somewhat mumbled, but he said, you could say that, yeah. But he admitted that his belief that rape is wrong is essentially arbitrary, okay? Because he can't allow for absolute moral values, because that would, you know, transcend in some way his naturalism, his belief that the universe and the molecules and the electrons that make it up is all that exists. It would suggest there's something beyond that. And to me, it would suggest there has to be someone giving out those moral absolutes, someone who has created them. So he still talks, though, as though moral absolutes do exist. And that this is the dilemma that I think most atheists find themselves in. They ultimately have to admit they can't believe in absolute moral values, and that if our morality is just a product of our evolution, then, you know, the things we believe are essentially arbitrary. We could have evolved into something, you know, different, where we believe rape is fine. You know, does that mean rape is that rape being wrong is a relative morality? It is fine in some instances, it isn't fine in other instances. Well, most people don't want to admit that, and nor do atheists when it comes down to it. And so they act most of the time as though there are moral absolutes. And I think that's the dilemma that they very often find themselves in. And in many ways, Richard Dawkins does exactly this at the end of The God Delusion, when he does talk about what he believes should be a fair and a just and a decent society and that kind of thing. And my question is always, well, great, but why are you saying that those things are the right things to do? Because as far as evolution goes, you could just as easily tell people to be selfish and pursue their own agenda, etc. It's as morally neutral, if you like, as the other option that Richard is saying we should follow in the book. So why should we follow, if you like, Richard's suggestion that we should do the right thing? You know, I mean, we all have that natural inclination that, yes, we should do the right thing. And we don't have to believe in God to have that inclination. But all I'm saying is, well, where does that belief come from? Why is it that we all ultimately do want to believe in absolute moral values? And I think we have to say that there has to be an ultimate moral lawgiver. And as much as, you know, atheists try and fudge the issue, I just think it's inescapable. I mean, we went round this quite a lot on last week's programme on the atheist bus campaign, but I just think it's a very strong argument for the existence of a moral lawgiver. Okay. Secondly, what interested me about this one is that Richard comes very close to an admission that there is a God, don't you reckon? I mean, when you go back and listen to him saying that there's something we don't understand at the root of the universe, and you can give that a name, God, if you want. And sure, he says he doesn't want to call it God because of the baggage that's involved with that. But it still seems to me that he's opening up to the possibility that there is a cause that goes beyond his very strict naturalism. So do listen again to that interview just by itself if you want to on the webpage. It's there. It's called Dawkins Debates, premier.org.uk/unbelievable. And if you're listening, Richard, I'd love to have you on this programme. Do contact us here at Premier, and we can arrange a proper debate on this stuff. OK, Larry Taunton is the man who arranged the debate, and I asked him what the motivation was for the Fixed Point Foundation sponsoring this particular debate.
Well, this is one of many debates, actually, that we have sponsored, and our desire in this is really to get the issues out in the open and discussed, and that would be from a Christian perspective, breaking out of the Christian subculture, and it seems to me that both sides create straw men. I think the atheists have done that. I think Christians have done that, and so maybe in choosing spokesmen for both sides that both sides are comfortable with, we achieve something a little better.
Why have you chosen John Lennox in particular as your spokesperson for the Christian scientific side?
Well, I think that that John has a, how shall I put it? I think he's very articulate, first of all. He is a scientist. In that sense, I think that there's a symmetry because Dawkins is an atheist and a scientist and an author. John Lennox is a scientist, a Christian, and an author. So I think it achieves a nice symmetry there.
Do you feel like there is an adequate response out there to Dawkins and the new atheists at the moment, or are we still kind of finding our way, as far as Christians are concerned, of creating an adequate response?
I think the church has been very slow to respond to the new atheists. I think maybe because they have either haven't really taken it seriously. I think sometimes the church is, I can't speak for the UK, but in America can be very insular. And then B, because I think the issue maybe happened rather rapidly. You know, with 9/11, really it's in the post 9/11 period that we've really seen this the so-called Four Horsemen coming along with their bestsellers and with the broad brush condemning all religious belief. So I think maybe the church has been slow to respond. Maybe because they didn't have an organized effort on their side when they started. Maybe we need to respond similarly.
It was an audience packed with some of the brightest young minds in the UK. Yeah. These are all Oxford undergraduates and their contemporaries. These are probably the policy shapers of the future.
Yeah.
Is this why you've chosen this setting? Because this has a big possible future ramifications, whether Dawkins' arguments win the day or whether there is an adequate Christian response?
Well, it would be one of the reasons for doing that. Certainly this is a place where opinions are formed, as you've pointed out, for the future and other places. And also because this is a place where maybe there's very little, you've suggested that perhaps in the broader culture that there's not been much of a response to Dawkins. I would certainly say that here there hasn't been much of a response to Dawkins. So it seemed like it was an appropriate place to come. And then you add to that the aura, the history of the Natural History Museum itself. Seemed like a great place to do it.
And wasn't it something over 100 years ago that it was
1860.
Huxley and
that's right.
And Wilberforce doing
Bishop,
their debate.
Bishop Samuel Wilberforce and Thomas Huxley. Yeah, 1860.
Do you see this as something of a 21st century rematch?
I suppose. The issue, the debate's moved on a notch or two since 1860. This wasn't strictly a discussion about evolution at that time. It's really the question, as the title of tonight's discussion was, has science really buried God? I think that Samuel Wilberforce might have been pleased with the results of tonight.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Larry Taunton there, the director of the Fixed Point Foundation. And as I said earlier, if you want to get hold of this debate, we obviously can't play the audio from the debate itself. These are just my reflections and interviews after the debate. But you can pre-order the DVD from their website. That's www.fixed-point.org. Now, one of the last people I spoke to was Paula. She's a very bright and articulate woman and a regular contributor to the RichardDawkins.net website. And I began by asking her what she thought of Dawkins' performance.
I've heard Richard debate a number of times, and I actually thought he was at his very best tonight. I've not actually heard him quite so on the ball, so powerful. I liked the fact they didn't let John get away with absolutely anything. He challenged him on every single point that he made, and he did it staying very much as he is, which is very pleasant and very likeable and quite humorous, but that's not his image all the time. So I thought tonight was probably the best I've ever seen him before.
Mm. I'm sure everyone would agree that Richard was a great performer. What did you think of John Lennox's performance?
Do you want the honest answer?
Yes, please.
I've heard John Lennox speak a couple of times, and I actually find him a frightful old windbag. And I dare you to put that in. I do. He sweeps past objections, and what he does is he says, well, if there's a God, and if the resurrection is true, then all the rest of it is easy to believe. Well, the thing is, that's the difficult bit to believe. And he's asking us to take that bit on trust and then say, well, OK, having got that bit on trust, the rest of it follows. Well, I'm not prepared to take that first bit on trust.
Well, is he asking us to take it on trust? Because Richard Dawkins' field is biology, John Lennox's is mathematics. Mm. So, in a sense, there's bound to be a different way of coming at this. Mm. Both scientists, but different realms.
And obviously what John sees in the universe is this incredible symmetry in mathematics that doesn't have to be there by any logical, for any logical reason, but it is.
Mm.
And it almost seems too impossible to postulate that that's just a random fact about our universe, that it has this incredible symmetry and that we're able to work out these wonderful mathematical explanations of physics and everything else. And you say there has to be someone who created that stuff.
And the idea, this argument from design, is actually a very alluring one. I mean, you can see why it's had the hold on people for as long as it has. The interesting thing for me is this leap from the idea that, I mean, the universe is fantastic. It is absolutely extraordinary. And actually, I think the strongest argument that John Lennox made tonight was the argument about the cell and how the cell functions. It is extraordinary. And I inspired by Richard Dawkins, actually, by his works. This last year, I've done a science course for the Open University. And by far, the most mind-boggling thing in the whole science course all year was how a cell functions. It's absolutely extraordinary. And I can understand, although I don't share the conclusion that people reach, I can understand that people look at that and say, there's got to be an intelligence behind that. The thing that gets me is that there are so many available intelligences to choose from if you look at the whole range of human history and human mythology and human religion. The leap from, well, look, the world is an extraordinary place and extraordinary things happen in it and we can't explain it all. And it would be possible to think that there was an intelligence behind it. Therefore, Adam and Eve, talking snakes, floods, atonement, original sin, forgiveness of sins, resurrection, and all the rest of it. Therefore, the Christian religion is correct. And that is a vast...
Obviously, there's a huge gap there. But in a sense, if you got to the first premise of God, that would be almost bridging a massive gap in itself from non-God to God. I think that it's actually a smaller gap then from God to God who reveals himself in a human person. I actually think that the biggest gap is between atheist and deist. I think the gap is smaller between deist and Christian.
I actually disagree.
Do you?
I actually disagree with that, yes. I mean, I'm an atheist. Mm. I'm a former Christian, actually.
Really?
Yes. But I'm an atheist now, and I don't believe in a deist God. Mm. I mean, I'm really clear about that. But I can recognise that the arguments for a deist God, well, they are unprovable. You know, they are also undisprovable.
Yes.
The thing that strikes me, I mean, as a former Christian, now atheist, the thing that I'm always very conscious of is that when you're inside the bubble, actually Christianity makes a very coherent argument. And I wouldn't dream of denying that. If you just buy into that first premise, the rest of it hangs together. It has a sort of coherent argument that makes it seem as if it's providing a rational explanation of everything. As someone who's now outside the bubble looking at it, it doesn't seem coherent at all for the simple reason that it doesn't hang together, because the very first premise is so completely unproven and unjustified, in my view. I mean, I always think now of Christianity as being very like a woolly jumper, that it will keep you warm. And actually, wool is incredibly strong. It's quite robust. And it's actually not that easy to damage a woolly jumper. It's quite difficult to come at it. But you just take one little sip at it, let one stitch drop, and the whole thing unravels. And I see Christianity as very like that.
That's a very interesting analogy. And why do you feel that you need to be snipping at the jumper? What's your motivation for trying to debunk Christianity?
Actually not that interested in debunking Christianity. I simply don't believe it myself.
Okay.
What I do have an interest in is achieving a society where Christianity is no longer given a privileged position within it.
There you are, Paula. Well, I do disagree with what Paula said at the first part of that interview in her assessment of Lennox's performance. I think he did a really great job of pulling out some of the problems that exist for atheists when it comes to saying science has disproved God. But I do appreciate her analysis of having once been a Christian and now as a post-Christian seeing that, you know, that there's a bubble that Christians maybe exist in. But it seems to me that there was a bit of an admission there, that she at least admits that Christianity is internally coherent. And that's a lot more than Richard Dawkins tends to admit. I mean, when during the debate, he was scoffing at the idea of a God who would be bothered about sin and, you know, would come down to earth and die and be crucified and resurrect, etc. But that's not actually what Paula was saying. She's saying if you get the first premise, God, then Christianity kind of makes sense. Yeah. And that's a big thing for me, that if you've got the God bit, then, you know, Christianity is the best explanation of a God who reveals himself. I believe that. But of course, if you don't believe the first premise that God exists, then it looks very strange and everything else. Fine. But I just wonder whether this debate ultimately would have at some level prompted a lot of the atheists who were there to question their certainty in the non-existence of God. I think that probably a lot of people left there with a few more questions than the certainties they came in with. And who knows what might happen once that barrier of non-belief in God has been overcome. Well, those were my reflections on the debate of the 21st of October at the Natural History Museum in Oxford between Dawkins and Lennox. I hope you enjoyed it. You can pre-order, as I say, that discussion by DVD from the Fixed Point Foundation's website. That's fixed-point.org. And you can find the debate that the Lennox and Dawkins were previously involved in at that address as well. Our own webpage is premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Please check back for the podcast, send it on to friends, and check the vast back catalogue of programmes that exist there. You can get them by podcast as well. So thanks for being with me. Next week, I'm joined by a Muslim and a Christian as James White of the Alpha and Omega Ministries in America takes on Abdullah al-Yusufi on the question of the Trinity and whether that leads to polytheism. Do hope you can join me again for that next week at the same time. Till then, bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you for listening to today's classic replay on the Oxford debate between John Lennox and Richard Dawkins, which was first broadcast on the 8th of November 2008. Do remember that you can get in touch and listen to more classic shows from our podcast archive by visiting premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.